Hello! Welcome to the Careers for Kids podcast where kids learn careers. This is Maxwell Valencia.
And this is Henry Morrison.
And today we have Daryl Demakes, a digital operations manager. Hello,
hey.
Mr. Demakes.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing good. Thank you for sparing your time to be on Careers for Kids. We have we hope we have a great interview now. Let's get started. Tell us what you currently do right now.
So I manage all the digital touch points for the town of Westport that reach out to the citizens of Westport. So things like the website, our social media strategy and tactics. And right now I'm working on rolling out a platform for people to create permits to do work in town.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's, a lot of working with people and business processes and working with technology to help them and working to understand what it is that we want to do for the people who live in town and a way that makes it easier for them and for the staff of the town and, using technology where it makes sense. Sometimes technology is cool and it's interesting, but it doesn't necessarily always do the right thing for what people want the end goal to be. So it's really important to think about what it is that you want the technology to do so that you know that you've achieved the goal in the end when you've built whatever it is and you roll it out and people use it and it actually does something in a way that is either more efficient or better or less costly or any combination of those.
That's wow. Cool. So, yeah. Tell us more about your career and how you got to this position.
So I started in television. I started as a producer on a show called America's Most Wanted back in the day.
I know that.
And when I was on that show as a producer, the show was responsible for the capture of 11 of the FBI's 10 most wanted. So we had captured, people who were wanted around the country, around the world sometimes. And it was a really great environment. It was my first job out of college. I went to school at the University of Florida in Gainesville, Florida. And I learned everything from writing to editing to shooting, and then post-production. And in post-production, which is, the editing and sound effects and graphics and all that sort of stuff, learned a lot about how computers were going to start to become more the way that we did things. When I started, there weren't computer editing systems. And so, believe it or not, so we would edit on tape. And there were computers controlling the tape machines, but there wasn't, you didn't take the tape and then ingest it and then digitize it and then edit. It was very much tape to tape. Then digital editing came in and I sort of found that there was going to be something coming, this internet thing that was sort of percolating, but not really real yet. And I thought, this is all going to be coming, to your desktop, to your laptop. And, 20, 30 years later, that was true. But it wasn't like I knew that the internet was coming or anything like that. I just thought there is something coming. I just have to stay looking toward it. And so my next job after America's Most Wanted, I was working as a producer for a PR company. And that's when the internet really started. And I started to put video online. And at the time it was really not a great experience, but we were learning about how to optimize video for streaming and how to optimize it for different screen sizes and things like that. So that was a really big part of the learning curve. Then after that, I went and started working for television brands, but in the digital side. So not so much working on like programs or television shows, but on the stuff that was secondary to it. So I worked at A&E and the History Channel on building apps for, at first it was, we were building them for cable boxes. And that, again, was sort of like an experiment because cable boxes didn't really have a lot of memory, and so you couldn't really do a lot of them. And the internet was really fast becoming the way things were going. And so we realized that we had to kind of pivot over to this new technology and really start building apps more for digital. And then the iPhone came out. And so we realized, well, now we have to build apps for the iPhone. So I started building apps for the iPhone. And then my next job was at WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment. And I built an app for them that was for their shows during the week. And it was like, if you were to watch the show on your phone, you would see stuff in between during the commercial break. So like if someone was, you know, jumped out of the ring and then on TV, it went to a commercial, you would then on your phone see them like what happened. Like they would go and follow the guy to the dressing room and throw a chair and that sort of stuff. So it was a way to kind of think about and test, and it was sort of a laboratory of sorts to figure out, you know, were people interested in being on their devices, on their phones? Were they watching from their 10-foot experience from the couch? Or were they watching both? We didn't really know. At the time, you know, people were trying to, not that people were trying to figure it out, people were just doing stuff. We were trying to figure out what people were doing. And so that was a great learning experience for me there. I also built a game for John Cena called John Cena Raceway. That was a racing game on mobile, and that was really fun. And I also built the main WWE app for Xbox. So working on different platforms, again, going back to that topic of begin with the end in mind, what is it that people want when they're on their mobile device? What is it that they want when they're on their gaming device? What is it they want when they're on their 10-foot device, their television? And how are they going to use it? And what's the length of time they're going to be using it? And are they going to want to interact with it or just be passive and let it pour over them? So those were all things we were learning as the technology started, you know, becoming more and more powerful and more capable of delivering video and interactive content. And then from there, I went to Disney and started doing Disney comic books. And we developed the capability of being able to read a comic book on a small screen, which is by using a flash layer. Flash technology is a layer of technology on internet material.
Adobe where Flash.
And it's kind of, you know, not really a thing anymore, but back in the day, it was a way to manipulate content. And so it would autoplay and kind of take you from kind of area to area, because you guys know comic books aren't like reading a book. They, the thought bubbles are all over the place, and the action takes place in different, and your eye is scanning the page in different ways. So we were able to create this kind of camera move, if you will, on top of the comics, that it would essentially play the comic book for you. And then that technology got bought by Comixology. And then I moved on to here at the town of Westport. And that brings you to where we are today, which is the website, social media, and permitting.
Yeah, back to where you felt something was coming. That was definitely a good choice to keep on that keep on that part, because now, like, everybody has like a laptop or a phone or some sort of thing. Like, even I'm right here working on like some thin laptop. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. You guys are exactly who we were thinking was going to be doing the stuff that we thought would happen. We just didn't know your name.
What part of your job do you enjoy the most and not really like the most?
I like solving problems. I like it when I can, I use ChatGPT for a lot of solutions. I'm using it a lot for Excel. Like for sort of mundane things, I find it fantastic to be able to say, like, I've got these strings in this column. Can you take it apart and put it in two columns? And it goes bloop, bloop, and it gives me a formula. And it's crazy how it can do things so quickly and intelligently just by really brief prompts. Mm-hmm. I have been experimenting with it in other areas with other prompts. And prompt building is very fascinating to me because it's very interesting to see the different responses you get by building your prompts differently. And maybe for your audience, those that don't understand what I'm talking about, prompts are what you ask or say to ChatGPT or any AI large language model to elicit a response. And the way you input the information or the kind of questions you ask it will change what you get back. And it's just fascinating to me to tell it things like a persona. You know, ChatGPT, you are a, you know, Fortune 100 marketing manager. You need to think of a way to make this newsletter title sound official, but interesting and fun. Go. You know, so things like that. That's a small example, but I have contacts in the industry who are doing some incredible things with visual images and video and audio that is just mind-blowing. And by giving it information like, you know, lens sizing and the amount of light and the aperture of the camera and all those things that you can't even imagine it would know, but it does. And then it spits out something that it is like crazy, that it's like having an entire feature film crew on your laptop.
Yeah, I didn't even realize you could like edit videos. I'm thinking of like what I use for like photos and videos. I mean, I just mess around with it, nothing serious. But it's like, have you heard of OpenPilot by Microsoft?
No. Oh, Pilot. Yeah. So I met someone who did a little bit of a seminar about, I think it's a Copilot. It's Copilot, right?
Yes. Yeah. Copilot.
So, and she said there's 20 different Copilot products, and I really didn't understand what she was saying, but they're built into all the various different Microsoft products. So, you know, Word, Excel, Outlook, Teams, et cetera, et cetera. And there's the one that's a version for, you know, when you are on the browser on Edge. And then within that, there's a professional product which will allow you to, you know, ingest information from your business and then interact with it through AI. So it's an interesting thing that they're doing, and they've got a real leg up with the fact that they have this relationship with ChatGPT, because they're really kind of leading right now. That's not to say that they're the one and only. There's so many different competitors right now. So it's a very interesting space. And if I had any unsolicited advice to give to any of your listeners, learn all you can about AI, learn all you can about prompt engineering, because AI is going to be, it's not going to take your job. It might take some jobs, but it's not going to take your job. It's going to be your coworker. It's going to be, you're going to be paired with AI. You're going to be, it's going to be, you know, like your R2-D2, essentially, to work with on a daily basis and to utilize in a way that's going to be able to think of ways to do things differently, think of ways to be more efficient, think of ways to be more creative that we haven't even really considered yet. So I'm very excited by it. I know there's, you know, a lot of pluses and minuses about the technology. You know, there's deep fakes and there's, you know, people doing things that they shouldn't be doing with it. And that's going to happen. But there's also good stuff that's going to happen too. And it's really, you know, putting some parameters on it. I don't think it's for everybody. I don't think, you know, necessarily, you know, people who are not knowledge workers are going to get a lot to benefit for, but I think even they can too. You know, I think, you know, just being able to, I don't know, ask it about your car. how do I, you know, fix this thing in my suspension? Like, and it's a, you know, 2022 Honda, and it'll like tell you exactly what to do. And you do have to be careful with it, because I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but it can hallucinate. Have you ever had ChatGPT spit out something that's totally like wrong, and you know it, and you're like, hey, ChatGPT, that's wrong. And it goes, oh, I'm sorry.
The research stuff, like, what is careers for kids? And they did like some random like counseling program.
Well, yeah, Maxwell, we're a pretty small like company, and we haven't been around for that long, and only use information up to a certain date. So,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's getting closer to real time though. I think it's up to, I'm not sure. I think I want to say, what is it? Last year?
Last time I checked, it was like 2021, like September. So.
Yeah, no, I think it's. Well, ChatGPT 4. I think if you have the.
Yeah, 3.5 is not as up to date. But.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not paying.
Yeah, I'm paying just because I want to know. I want to keep experimenting. I think that's part of my, when I look back on and just talking with you guys about my experience, it you know, I feel like there's two ways to look at it. One is, and a friend of mine used to call this the bright shiny object, and it's like, oh look, there's something bright and shiny, let's go towards it. And that's one way of looking at it, and that can be a deficit. That can be, you take your eye off something and you're looking for the new fun, cool thing, and you're not really, you know, I don't know, digging in to the thing that you maybe could or should be doing. And I've experienced that. I think we all do to some degree or another. But I also feel like I like being in a position where I can give the best of my skill set to the people around me. And also keep learning and keep growing and keep thinking about new things. And that's just kind of who I am and what I like. I like when I can figure out something. That's fun for me.
So was this the dream job you imagine yourself doing when you were a kid?
I really enjoyed my time at Disney. When I was there, they moved from White Plains, New York to California. This was Disney Publishing. And I really was thinking about moving, but I had two new kids and I didn't really think I should move to California. And I just didn't seem like the right move at the time, and would love to continue to work with them. And if I were to work with them, I'd love to work in their Imagineering group. To me, that would be my dream job. You know the Imagineers do, right? They're the guys and women that build the rides and the animatronics and all the other cool new stuff that they're doing. I saw this really interesting product that they just developed there. It's a floor that is made of little hexagons that are about the size of a golf ball, and they are underneath your feet, and you can move. So like if you're in a VR game, you can walk. So you know how right now, if you walk, you like walking through your wall. So like this allows you to actually literally walk in a run. And it takes you at the speed that you're running through the virtual reality. Prototype now, so it's not a commercially available product, but it seems really cool. It seems like an answer to something that's been sort of a roadblock in the kind of expansion of virtual reality is that limitation. Say that again, sorry. So sorry, Maxwell, you're really low and I can't hear you. I got you turned up all the way.
Oh, who were your main idols when you were young? Sorry about that.
No problem. My main idols were musicians. I loved music since I was a little kid. I inherited the Beatles Abbey Road album from my sister, and I listened to it until there was no music left on it. I just loved what they were doing, and it was an interesting thing because now I know, after watching the documentary on Apple Plus, that that album was really stuff that was left half done. And so there's one side of the album that is a medley of a bunch of different songs. And it seems very carefully constructed and very interestingly interwoven as being so different. Like each of these songs are different. They don't make sense together. And they're talking about different things and there's no continuity. And I just thought it was like just artistic creativity. But it really was that, plus the fact that they were disintegrated. And they were just trying to put out another album. But I think if there's any positive spin to put on that, is that sometimes when you're faced with creative challenges, you make your best stuff. And so sometimes you may think to yourself, well, if I had more time to do thus and such, X, Y, Z, I could do it or better. Or if I had more money, or if I had more resources, or if I had more computing power, or if I had more whatever. But sometimes giving yourself limitations is actually a catalyst for creativity. It's a way to challenge yourself to do something in a way that hadn't been done before. And so, yeah, I think, not that my young years at 5 years old knew anything about music other than the fact that I really liked it. And I certainly didn't know how it was created. I was drawn to it, and a lot of people were too. And I think there's something about it. I think there's something about that, you know, that creativity on the run that is sort of interesting. It can create a lot of bad stuff too. But yeah, it's an interesting thing. So my heroes were musicians, and I liked all the music that, you know, like 80s and new wave music, David Bowie, Elton John, yeah, people like that were really the people I looked up to. And I think now, you know, it's more people who are doing things to help save the planet, because I feel, you know, you're going to inherit all that has come before, and it's things that we adults are not looking at in the way that we should be looking at, and it's that we need to do things in a way that is sustainable. So, you know, people who are building green homes, and people who are not using things that are not renewable. And here in Westport, we're championing an effort to have people, when they go and get takeout food, to leave behind and not get the utensils and all the extra stuff. Because while it seems like a little bit of stuff, it adds up to mountains of things that get thrown into our waste stream. And if you, you know, the three of us on this call, you know, every other time say no to the extra stuff, in times of bazillion, right, that could really slow the amount of trash that goes into landfills. And so I find, you know, those are little things that is, when you look at it, well, what's that going to do to the planet? But if you multiply it times a billion, it becomes something. And so those are my heroes now, are people who are working on those types of goals.
So what are the biggest challenges that you think can be solved by our generation that you want to solve for you?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that is first and foremost on my mind is we need to start realizing that we're all human, that while we all may have different points of view, upbringings, places we're from, religions, things that we value, that we're all human and we're all in this together, and that we need to respect one another. I'm hoping that your generation is able to take that in and reflect it back out to the planet, because we're all on this one spaceship. At this point, there's not another spaceship. So if there were, I'm sure a lot of people would want to get on it. But right now, there's not. And so we need to all be pulling in the same direction. That's the main thing I'm hoping for your generation. You are part of the wave of people who look beyond, you know, skin color and wealth and privilege and, you know, just difference. Mm-hmm. Are able to say,
yeah.
And if someone wants to follow in your footsteps in your careers, what'd you tell him or her?
I would say learn to code at least something like Python, and then learn database, some database, like a SQL database, and then learn about prompt engineering and statistical analysis. I think if you compile those four things into a high school curriculum and or college major, you would be set for being able to essentially design your own either company, if you wanted to create your own company, or work anywhere, any, you know, large corporation or any, you know, sorry, I lost the thread because I think you're trying to get us to stop because you're flashing the mute sign.
No, I'm all right. My computer's just having a seizure right now.
Oh, okay. So where was I? I said, a large corporation. Here's a pickup. Large corporation or your own company or in a research facility or research institution where you're developing new drugs or new technology. So I think that is what I would say for someone who is looking to do something like what I'm doing, to learn those things, to have them be a part of your basis of understanding. And you don't have to be an expert in any one of them. You don't have to drill down into a four-year degree program in any one of them. I think if you were to take courses in each of them and at least get some fluency, some, you know, baseline ability in all of them, you'd be set.
Yeah. You know, I'm also learning a little bit of Python and HTML.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I've taught myself stuff like C++, some HTML. I'm trying to start a little bit of Python now.
Cool. Yeah, no, it's all good because when you learn one, you'll realize that a lot of things you learn are the basis for other languages, and then once you know one, the other ones come quite quickly. And that's true with foreign languages as well. Oh, that's the other thing. Yeah, foreign language. Mm.
Thank you so much.
There's so many things, though, you know, you guys. Well, I know you got to wrap up.
Thank you so much, Mr. DeMakes, for allowing us to interview you. I'm sure more kids will be inspired by this interview.
Thanks for having me.
Well, and whoever is listening, thanks for listening to the Careers for Kids podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you in the next episode. Bye!